only. If they wanted to try to clean up the prisons, then they could squeeze the Libyan government through the Libyan Coast Guard, since it's entirely funded by the EU, and say, look, if you want more of our assistance, then, you know, you have to immediately open the doors of the detention centers, let observers in, raise the standards, stop the abuses. That's a short-term pragmatic goal. But the deeper goal is there needs to be more funding to slow and more policy to slow the outflow of desperate people from their place of origin.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us, Ian Urbina, investigative journalist, director of the Outlaw Ocean Project. His recent article in the December issue of The New Yorker is titled, "The Invisible Wall Inside the Secretive Libyan Prisons That Keep Migrants Out of Europe." We'll link to his project on our website at democracynow.org. And again, if you'd like to join us for our 25th anniversary celebration that we had the other night, you can just go to democracynow.org and see our interviews with Noam Chomsky and Angela Davis, with Winona LaDuke and the National Book Award-winning poet Martina Spada, the performances by Lila Downs and Tom Morello, and appearances by Danny DeVito and Danny Glover and Cornel West. That's at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Mimi Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's end of the year drive is happening right now, and we invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, they've released the name of a suspected carjacker shot by Portland police. Outsourced Oregon healthcare workers join some of their colleagues who are on strike. And doctors in Washington state say more kids younger than 4 need protection from the flu. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Glad to have you with us tonight. Portland police have released the identity of a man killed in a police shooting on I-5 in North Portland Monday. He was 30-year-old Brandon Keck. At first, police say he shot a woman during a carjacking attempt, but later they said she was not injured by gunfire. Officers say they believe Keck was involved in several armed carjackings and other crimes leading up to the shooting. The officer who opened fire, John Hughes, is a 17-year veteran of the Portland Police. As is typical in these cases, he's on paid leave until the investigation's complete. Police connect Keck to a home invasion Monday morning near Northeast Grant Place and 32nd Avenue, where someone stole a car. A short time later, police received a report about shots fired 2 miles away outside a Hyatt in the Lloyd District. They say a suspect got rid of the first stolen car and took a second car at gunpoint. They then say he drove the wrong direction on the northbound lanes of I-5 near Rosa Parks Way, crashed the car, and then tried another carjacking on the freeway. Outsourced workers are standing with their striking colleagues at an Oregon hospital. Healthcare workers in Springfield are striking through Friday over stalled contract negotiations. Now, as Eric Tegadoff reports, about 70 workers at McKenzie Willamette Medical Center in Springfield, whose jobs were outsourced, are standing with their colleagues and joining the picket lines.
Recently, outsourced workers are standing in solidarity with their striking colleagues at McKenzie Willamette Medical Center. More than 300 healthcare workers with Service Employees International Union Local 49 are on strike this week over contract negotiations, 2 months after workers went on strike to stop outsourcing. As of Sunday, about 70 workers in the housekeeping, linen, and dietary departments at the hospital are managed by the Texas-based staffing company HHS. Christy Green has worked for McKenzie Willamette Medical Center for 17 years as a dietary clerk and has had her job outsourced. She spoke from the picket line.
It was very scary and very painful and very disconcerting that we literally meant nothing after working through an entire pandemic and trying to hold the whole department together by ourselves.
Green notes that she and other HHS employees aren't striking, just standing in solidarity with other SEIU Local 49 members at the hospital. McKenzie Willamette Medical Center says the goal of outsourcing in this case is to improve the patient experience. Green says there are many challenges being under new management after so many years working directly for McKenzie Willamette Medical Center.
We have to start all over with a contract. We're going to have a 90-day probationary period, whether we've been here for 35 years or 6 months. Started over on like all of the PTO accruement.
Green says a majority of the 70 employees who saw their jobs outsourced are picketing alongside striking workers.
Just because we were outsourced on Sunday does not mean that our fight is over or that we're not still a team or a union.
Members of SEIU Local 49 allege management at the hospital has engaged in unfair labor practices. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
In a big win for labor, Starbucks workers have voted to form their first union in the country. The workers from one store in Buffalo, New York voted 19-8 to unionize. A second store in Buffalo voted down the union, and a third has a court battle over 7 challenged votes. The newly unionized workers will join Workers United with a huge Service Employees International Union. Starbucks has fought off attempts to organize in New York City and Philadelphia, but last year workers at another Starbucks store in Canada unionized. The pro-union workers pushed for better staffing, training, and pay. Just hours before they were going to vote, Starbucks announced it would raise its starting pay to $15 an hour. An Oregon congressman is behind a proposed requirement that the U.S. military take responsibility for toxic cleanup sites, including Pearl Harbor. Representative Earl Blumenauer's provision is in the Department of Defense budget bill. This week, the U.S. House approved it, and it's heading next to the Senate. It acknowledges the Defense Department's role in polluting the environment and would hold the military accountable for Superfund toxic cleanup sites around the nation. Blumenauer says the Department of Defense has never acknowledged their responsibility for this pollution. About 73 million people live within 3 miles of a Superfund site. A Senate committee is hearing about the impact of a toxic chemical that could have poisoned as many as 200 million people. Michaela Savitt reports the harmful contaminant was in drinking water and came from hundreds of military bases.
Advocates for the environment are applauding the Biden administration's new executive order prioritizing climate initiatives, including federal purchasing of products that don't use the toxic chemicals known as PFAS. Proponents of clean water initiatives are also seeking additional action on the dangerous chemical in the state of New York and around the country. Today, a Senate committee hearing will examine the Department of Defense Inspector General's report on the federal response to PFAS detected in drinking water of military bases. Scott Faber with the Environmental Working Group hopes the hearing will answer questions for the communities affected.
How many service members were drinking contaminated tap water? How contaminated? For how long? Have we alerted those service members about potential effects of PFAS? If not, why not? When will we?
The working group says in New York, the Plattsburgh Air Force Base and Niagara Falls Air Base were found to have some of the highest rates of the contaminants in their drinking water. PFAS can't break down in the environment, and exposure to them has shown to cause negative health effects. In New York State, 64% of residents who responded to an April 2021 Siena College poll reported being very concerned about water pollution. Colin O'Neill, also with the Environmental Working Group, says it's also time for Congress to pass the PFAS Action Act, which has passed in the House.
This would set important deadlines for EPA to develop standards for PFAS under our various environmental statutes, including our federal cleanup law, which would further push DOD to clean up PFAS at military installations and other federal facilities.
In October, the Environmental Protection Agency announced a roadmap to address PFAS pollution, such as monitoring, research, and reporting requirements. In addition, a state-level bill that mandates monitoring the state's drinking water for emerging contaminants, including PFAS, now awaits New York Governor Kathy Hochul's signature. I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Oregon may finally start a cap-and-trade program to fight climate change after years of attempts. This time it comes from Governor Kate Brown's office instead of the state legislature. Oregon's Environmental Quality Commission meets next week to vote on new rules that would limit Oregon's emissions from fossil fuels and keep pulling the cap down over the next 30 years. Though Oregon Democrats tried to pass a legislative version of this plan in 2019 and 2020, Republicans walked out and blocked lawmakers from voting on the legislation. In March of 2020, Brown issued an executive order directing the Environmental Quality Commission to come up with its own version of cap and trade. Now DEQ says it got thousands of public comments, most of which asked for fast action to fight climate change and cut pollution. The final version would set a target of a 50% reduction in emissions by the year 2035 and 90% by 2050. President Biden's ordered the Federal Trade Commission to investigate rising gasoline prices, and he released 50 million barrels of oil from the National Strategic Reserve to help lower costs. As Eric Lottis explains, a new report links the higher gas prices to soaring oil industry profits.
As Nebraskans continue to endure high gas prices, 24 of the top oil and gas corporations made nearly $174 billion in profits this year, with profits in the past 3 months alone topping $74 billion, according to a new report by Accountable.us. Tony Kark, the group's executive director, says top executives at Chevron and British Petroleum have privately boasted about redistributing what they view as excess cash.
Rather than giving American consumers a break at the pump, they're making all of this money in profits, and they seem to be very happy about taking that money and increasing the value of their stock and the compensations for their executives.
11 companies gave more than $36 billion in payouts to shareholders, while CEOs saw their pay rise by more than $10 million, including a $33 million package for Chevron CEO Michael Wirth. Oil and gas companies have pointed to the Biden administration's efforts to mitigate climate change as a primary reason they haven't been able to increase production. Kark points out that much of the oil and gas industry's millions of acres already under lease for production remain untapped. While he admits there are a lot of moving parts involved in gasoline pricing, from supply chain issues to rising demand.
But what can't be denied is that these higher gas prices, the executives themselves are saying, are helping increase their profits. And those profits are not being put to lower gas prices for you. They're going to lining their pockets.
Rising prices linked to profits are not just limited to the oil and gas industry. A recent Bloomberg report found that corporate profit margins have hit their highest level since 1950. Kark believes corporate greed is a significant factor in what is fueling the nation's rising inflation rate.
Most Americans see the higher prices at the pump. They see higher prices at the grocery store. People should be seeing where the money is going.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Nebraska News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We would like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned for Making Contact right after this newscast, then Rose City Native Radio at 6 o'clock. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, mostly cloudy, a low down to 36 overnight. And tomorrow, we're looking at a few showers early Friday, becoming a steady light rain later in the day. The rain chances 70%. The high will reach near 45. Friday night, we'll see as much as an inch of rain, and it'll get windy. For the weekend, more rain Saturday and Sunday. Highs in the 40s, lows reaching 38. Today in history, on this date in 1979, a commission of scientists declared that smallpox was eradicated, making it the first time in human history that an infectious disease was officially defeated. Something similar to smallpox has ravaged humanity for thousands of years. The quote of the day is from epidemiologist Dr. Mike Ryan at the World Health Organization. He said about the current pandemic, "Be fast, have no regrets. If you need to be right before you move, you will never win." An Alaska Native man is fighting deportation from Canada, and Cherokee Nation opens its new research center. For more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Alaska Native man is fighting deportation from Canada's Northwest Territories. Advocates say he's happily married in a community with close cultural and linguistic ties. But as Jacob Resnick reports, his criminal record in Alaska has caused Canadian authorities to order his removal.
Canadian authorities are trying to remove Herman Oyagok, who turns 51 this month, due to his criminal record. Court records in Alaska show about a dozen cases, mostly misdemeanors, in Oyagok's name. The exception is a 1998 felony assault conviction in Barrow that records show involved domestic violence. And that's led Canadian authorities to deny him the right to remain in a place that's been his home for the last 3 years, where his advocates say he's happily married and leading a peaceful life. Nick Sousen is a lawyer in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, who's called attention to the case.
The real issue comes down to Canada not recognizing Indigenous rights, and specifically the right of Inupiat to travel across traditional routes that they've been traveling since time immemorial for thousands of years.
Canada's border agency recently ordered him deported to Juneau, Alaska's capital city, where Oyagok says he's never been before. But after successfully challenging Canadian authorities in court, his lawyers have won him a reprieve from being removed as soon as December 13th.
But just to be clear, he can still be deported right now at any time.
Oyagok's adopted community of Iqaluit shares cultural and linguistic ties with Utqiagvik, the Alaska Inupiat community where he grew up.
It shouldn't happen to any other Inuit and Indigenous people whose traditional territories span across Canadian-American borders or any other border for that matter.
An 18th century treaty gives Indigenous people of North America the right to freely cross the border. And Sousen says he's been making that case to Canadian authorities intent upon removing him. Iqaluit is a village of about 1,500 people on the banks of the Mackenzie River. It's about 550 miles east of Oyagok's hometown in Alaska. For National Native News, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Cherokee Nation officials celebrated the opening of the Cherokee National Research Center in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, on Wednesday. The facility is housing documents and cultural artifacts from the 1700s to present day. At the grand opening, Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. talked about how the public can access information and services.
So this facility at Cherokee Springs Plaza is a place where people can come do research, whether it's genealogical research for their family or it's researching the archives and artifacts that are in this wonderful facility. And the key part about this facility is that it is both user-friendly for people that want to come in, but it's also very safe for the archives and the records. We have a lot of precious artifacts in here. The land patent from the 19th century, signed by President Van Buren, for example, is in here, and it's now safe and secure with a great fire suppression system, tornado-proof. So I think the Cherokee people can feel good about today because we've really protected something that's really precious and irreplaceable.
The Tribal Council, more than a year ago, identified a threat to the historic items due to aging infrastructure and the need for proper preservation. The council worked swiftly with the tribe's business branch and historical society to provide a place to safeguard the items. The center is housing more than 11,000 Cherokee-related documents and cultural artifacts. A redistricting map for New Mexico State House, which is backed by tribal leaders, passed committees in the state legislature Wednesday. The source New Mexico reports it will likely be debated on the floor Friday. Tribes worked together for months to make sure they were included in the redistricting process and to protect the Native vote. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
President Biden says American troops will not prevent a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Democrats want a Republican congresswoman punished because of her anti-Muslim comments. And former Trump aide Mark Meadows fires back over a subpoena from the panel investigating what happened on January 6th. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The idea the United States is going to unilaterally use force to confront Russia invading Ukraine is not in the cards right now.
President Joe Biden will speak with the president of Ukraine about the Russian military buildup on its border. Moscow denies aiming to invade Ukraine and instead warned of a NATO expansion eastward. In Kansas City Wednesday, Biden promoted the billion-dollar bipartisan infrastructure law and unveiled a new goal of, quote, building a better America, unquote.
We're not going to lose anymore, I promise you. The time of losing is over.
Biden also signed an executive order requiring the federal government to end the purchase of combustion engine vehicles by 2035 and convert buildings to clean energy sources by 2050. The House passed a bill that would ban imports from the Chinese region of Xinjiang, suspected of being made from forced labor. The U.S. and several other countries have recognized China's repression of Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities as genocide. The Senate passed a similar bill in July. Representative Rashida Tlaib and other Democrats are behind a new resolution to remove Republican Lauren Boebert from her committee assignments over anti-Muslim remarks.
We can't continue to say that bigotry has no place in our society, that violence has no place, and then not take any action, to be completely silent, to dismiss it.
Boebert apologized after the backlash for calling Democrat Ilhan Omar a member of the House's, quote, jihad squad, unquote. Former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows is suing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the January 6th Select Committee over a subpoena, claiming he can't discuss matters that could be covered by executive privilege. The lawsuit was announced after the panel said it would suggest criminal charges against Meadows for refusing to comply. Vice President Kamala Harris cast her 15th tie-breaking vote in the Senate to confirm Rachel Rollins as the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts. Senator Ted Cruz and other Republicans characterize Rollins as soft on crime.
Ms. Rollins is part of a web of left-wing district attorneys across the country who see it as their job not to prosecute crime, rather to protect criminals.
New York Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand accused her colleagues on the Senate Armed Services Committee of watering down military justice reforms and the National Defense Authorization Act by removing provisions related to the prosecution of serious crimes like sexual assault.
This bill does not reform the military justice system in a way that will truly help survivors get justice. It does not remove serious crimes out of the chain of command.
The bill passed by the House would strip commanders of most of their authority to prosecute cases, but still allow them to oversee key parts of the trials. And a new Wall Street Journal poll finds Hispanic voters, once a Democratic stronghold, are split between Republicans and Democrats on a generic ballot at 37%. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy online at publicnewsservice.org.
So far, about a quarter of Americans age 18 and older have received their COVID-19 booster shots. Now experts say the boosters could make the upcoming holiday season much safer.
The holiday season is approaching, and one way to boost this time of year could be with a booster shot of the COVID-19 vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has recommended that everyone ages 18 and up who has received the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines should get a booster shot. The shot is recommended at least 6 months after the initial round. The CDC says mixing and matching the vaccine brands is fine. AARP Idaho State Director Lupe Whistle says getting boosted is important for the season.
We want to make sure that we're able to get together with families and enjoy the holiday, but we have to remember how important it is to stay safe and keep our loved ones safe, especially the older population.
The CDC also recommends that people get a booster of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine at least 2 months after their initial shot. Whistle says people can talk to their primary care doctor about setting up an appointment. They also are being offered at certain retail pharmacies. Whistle says getting vaccinated also has added benefits with the emergence of the latest variant of COVID-19 known as Omicron.
We don't know what the new variant is going to bring. We just don't. But the more we protect ourselves, the better we all are.
The Pfizer vaccine has been approved for children ages 5 and up. Whistle says getting eligible children vaccinated could provide important protection for the older population. about half of eligible Idahoans are vaccinated, including three-quarters of those 65 and older. About 18% of Idahoans 18 and older have received a booster shot. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Today, the Food and Drug Administration expanded the emergency use authorization for Pfizer's COVID-19 booster shots for 16 and 17-year-olds. It's now the only booster available in the U.S. for that age group. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky has signed off on the boosters, saying she strongly encourages 16 and 17-year-olds to get their boosters if they're at least 6 months past their first Pfizer vaccination series. An appeals court has ruled against former President Donald Trump in a fight over documents related to the January 6th riot at the Capitol. His lawyers are likely to try filing an emergency appeal now with the U.S. Supreme Court to try to block the release of hundreds of documents created when Trump was in the White House. A House committee investigating January 6th wants the documents to do a thorough investigation into how the actions of the former president, his advisors, and others in the government may have contributed to the attack on Congress, the failed attempt to stop the peaceful transfer of power to President Biden. The former president's trying to claim executive privilege over the documents, but Biden decided the 700 pages should be turned over to Congress. The rate of flu shots given out was up in 2020, but decreased for children younger than 4. Now some doctors in Washington state are trying to convince families to get their children protected for this flu season. Eric Tegedoff talked to a family medicine specialist from Kaiser Permanente.
It's Flu Awareness Week, and one doctor is spotlighting the importance of protecting children from the virus this season. Dr. Melissa Quisano is a family medicine specialist at Kaiser Permanente in Spokane. She notes that the spread of flu goes up in winter as people gather for the holidays.
Unfortunately, the more we gather in enclosed spaces, the more we share our germs. We want to protect ourselves and protect our loved ones. So it's definitely important to get those vaccines before you're gathering with family or even larger crowds.
Data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that the number of flu shots administered to children younger than 4 last year was down from previous years. The number of shots decreased almost 14% for kids ages 6 to 23 months and nearly 12% for children ages 2 to 4 for 2020. Quisano says a similar decline in children getting immunizations is likely because families were asked to stay home during the pandemic, noting that it's great that they listened.
Except for the unfortunate result of this is that a lot of those children maybe missed their usual well-child checks, which is when we most often will give their vaccinations, their immunizations, and so a lot of children miss their regularly scheduled immunizations as well.
According to the Washington State Department of Health, routine vaccines like Tdap, which is required to enter seventh grade in the state, was down 11% last year. Shots for meningococcal disease were down more than 8% for 11 and 12-year-olds. Quisano says she understands that people have a lot of questions about vaccines.
I just encourage families, if they have any questions, to please feel free to reach out to their primary care clinician. We're happy to answer those questions.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Tegedoff, Eric Galatis, and Michaela Savick. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Fulham, on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell, so glad you could join us. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December the 31st. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Now stay tuned for Making Contact coming up next.